Hi, my name is David Gonzalez. I'm here to interview
Larry Wilson.
And today is the 8th of October of 2015. We're interviewing Mr. Wilson because of his extensive knowledge in kind of industry. So Mr. Wilson, where were you born?
I was born in Chicago.
And in approximately like
1964. You want to where? Under a bridge?
Nah, that'll do. What's your profession for a living?
I work at Oakton Community College, and I'm the building supervisor for maintenance.
And so, like, if you had not a So, like, when you're not usually working, what do you usually do on your free time?
When I'm not working at work or at home? I got a lot of stuff I do at home, too, fixing stuff.
All right.
Free time, I putz around with electromechanical machines, like pinball, vending machines, various arcade machines. That's what I do for fun.
Yeah,
I'm pretty boring.
No, that's pretty interesting, to be honest. I wish I'd do that for fun, because, you know, it works a lot with your other skills that you have.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, my training was in heating, ventilation, and air conditioning. I went to Triton, and I went to Coin America, and that's what I started out as over there. Then when my boss retired, I was able to take his job. So, you know, it's always better when you're sitting in the chair instead of doing the work.
Yeah, definitely. And so, like, to balance your work with your hobby, you basically just do this anytime you have any sort of free time, correct?
Yeah. It first started basically when I got a Coke machine. That was the first thing I bought, and I bought it when I was, like, 17. And then later on, I got another Coke machine. And where I was working at a factory at the time, and they wanted to... basically get you to go to school for whatever. They really didn't care, just lined you with the school for something. So I decided to go to Coin to learn refrigeration, just in case my Coke machine broke, I would know how to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I did. And then from that, I learned electrical. And with the electrical skills, I was able to get these machines that were all beat up and get them to work. So that's how it ended up being, like, one machine, and ended up being, you can see how many I got.
Yeah, like another and another.
Yeah, it's like an addictive hobby. But I guess it's better than heroin, right?
Definitely. what happened to those first machines? Are they still here?
I have one I could show you. But my first Coke machine, I actually sold it a little while ago. It was funny because at first it was this part of the basement, then it came over here, then it came a little closer to the door, and eventually went out the door. So,
it started moving slow
throughout the years. It got a little more boring than the new stuff coming in, and you got to make room for
other stuff.
New stuff, yeah. Because you're always like, oh, that's it. You know, my wife's always like, hey, you're not going to get nothing else. Like, oh, no. I'm like, oh, wait, look at that. You know, and then all of a sudden you're buying that. And then it's like, where am I going to put it? So then you have to, you know, basically get rid of stuff. Yeah. But I got a good variety of games just because they're all different. A lot of people will collect just straight pinball or just work on just pinball. I have a huge variety of different different parts of the gaming industry.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so I just like I said, you just start with something and you just keep going, and then you end up with this. So when I die, my wife's gonna have a hell of a garage sale.
Definitely. She said, man. So, like, well, what keeps you motivated? Just like the curiosity of how things work, or
yeah,
like fixing it.
Yeah, I usually get started on something, and you get to the point of where aggravation just takes over, and then you just start getting more motivated to figure it out, and eventually, you know, when you figure it out, then it's awesome. You're like, oh, this, you know, it's like a natural high. You're like, this is great. I got this thing working.
Like,
this thing has been working
for
50 years, and I got it going, you know. And then eventually it ends up in that one spot, and you get something else, and it goes down the line, goes out the door.
It's So, like, with all this figuring out and how the machines work and everything,
yeah.
do you hope these will take you anywhere, or is it just, like, for the thrill of it?
It's just basically for the thrill of it. It was cool when my kids were small, you know, because they would play these games that no one in their generation ever seen.
Definitely.
So that was pretty neat. That was a big thrill for me. And then at parties, you get people come over and they're like, you know, wow, look,
I
want to
try
this. This is cool.
Yeah.
What's this do? What's that do? You know?
Yeah.
So that's always fun. But generally, you know, they just sit here, you know, because most people your age won't want to play these.
Yeah, there's other stuff out there. So, like, when you were, like, fixing them, when your kids were younger, did you, like, invite them to, like, hey, this is how this works and why?
Yes, Todd wasn't much interested in it. He liked playing them, but Kyle, my other son, he actually knows how to work on some of these, and he would help me out, and he ended up being going to school for auto mechanics, so he's mechanically inclined, and he can get it. He'll figure it out. I don't think he has the passion I have, but see, you got to remember, this is stuff that I grew up with.
Mm-hmm.
Where when you're my age and there's some other new cool stuff out there, you'll be like, you know, wow, remember this game? Yeah, this is what I like. And your kids will be like, psh, that's garbage. Look at this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it is cool. I remember when the kids were smaller, they would have like a friend come over, and the friend would be going nuts, you know, playing all the games. And then, you know, about 40 minutes later, he's like, you know, let's go to Xbox or PlayStation. And he's like, I don't want to play with this stuff. You know, if you can't use your thumbs, it's no fun, right?
Yeah, if it requires to actually be standing while
yeah,
playing.
You gotta stand.
And
you gotta
come on.
Use your index fingers for flippers. No, I use my thumbs, man.
I gotta use the triggers for the
yeah.
flippers. You know? So, like, when you first bought your first Coke machine, was there anyone who told you to buy it, or like?
No, I went to a party when I was young, and at this party, I saw it. And I just thought it looked cool. It was really cool.
Cheap.
It was round and it was embossed, you know. So the Coke was embossed on like four sides, and it had really cool red and white design. It was from the '50s, you know.
Yeah.
I just thought it was cool, so I bought it for I think $75, and me and my buddy he got his dad's truck, and we took it to my mom's house and snuck it in the house, and it sat in my room for probably about 2 years before anyone seen it. At least my dad didn't know I had it. My mom knew I had it. He wasn't too excited once I got some more machines. That's how it started. I had the two Coke machines in my bedroom, you know. And then when I actually moved, me and my wife bought this house. The biggest thing that I had, like, she had a bed, you know, dressers, normal stuff. I had a jukebox and two Coke machines. That was it, and a table. You know, like, yeah, I'm right. I didn't even have a knife and fork, you know. Plus, I got the jukebox.
So how since you first bought that first Coke machine, how do you see the whole industry changing from that?
Well, as far as a hobby, it's easier now because of websites like eBay or Craigslist. So if you see something, you can always find it now.
Mm-hmm.
Where when I was a kid, you had a thing called a newspaper, and they had these things called ads in there. You know, you had to look them up, and a thing called Trading Times. Yeah, and basically you would have to hunt for stuff or garage sales, and it was like hit or miss. So there was like a dry period where I just had the two Coke machines. I didn't have nothing electromechanical yet, and then one day I got a job where I'm working now, and this guy said, hey, you want a pinball machine? I'm like, nah, I don't like pinball that much. And he's like, oh, no, it's a bowling machine. I said, oh, yeah, I like that. Because I grew up with that. I used to go, when we were kids, they didn't have malls. So we would go to, like, Sears. My mom went to go there. My dad would drive, and my dad and grandfather would end up at the bar.
Yeah.
So after Sears, we'd come to the bar, and they had Shuffle Alleys. So that's what we did. We played with those, and that was like the spark of it. So when he said he had one of those, that just brought back a lot of memories of playing that. So I got it, and it wasn't working, and I couldn't fix it for about a half a year because I was finishing up at Triton. And then I went through it, and finally one day it worked. That was it. That was it. Then I was pretty much hooked on trying to get machines and, you know, figuring them out and, you know, getting to work.
Oh, that's awesome. And have you seen any of the, like, regarding pinball machines, have
mm-hmm.
you, like, has there been any change in their, like, design from the older days?
Yeah,
or?
Pinball has changed a lot. Right now there's, I think, two manufacturers, Stern, which is still in Illinois, and there's Jersey Jack or something like that. He made a Wizard of Oz pinball machine, and that's all he made so far. But Stern, basically, when I was a kid, they had pinball just about everywhere. And the play fields were wide open, and you know, you have bumpers and stuff, but you can see where the ball goes, and it was more of a skill from using the flippers, trying to hit the different targets. And then now, it's just so much crap on there. You don't even know where the ball is. And I think it's less skill now because there's just so many things happening, multi-balls and all kinds of things just going on. And
you're just trying to keep the ball from going in the hole.
Basically,
point,
that's
yeah.
that's what the whole point is, not to let it go past your flippers, right? But it's just all electronic now, where before it was electromechanical. Everything's digital. Everything has sound. Everything has a theme. Before, they could have just made a pinball machine, you know, called Three Schmoes or whatever, and it'd just have three guys you don't know, and there's a pinball machine. Now everything has to be a theme. They got they have Avatar. The latest one is a Hobbit coming out. Everything's either a movie or a TV show, like Sopranos or something like that.
Yeah.
So there's no hokey games. Like mine over there, if you look at it, it's called Jukebox. Now, who the heck would want to play that now, you know? You know, it's got a bunch of people with bell bottoms on. You know, that's just like, they got to go for the masses now, where before they could just make all these different games and just put them in all these different diners and arcades. Now, most of the games are used for home use now, where before they weren't home use games. So everything has to have a theme, and, you know, everyone's buying it for that.
So they moved from, like, a public sector to a private sector?
They have, yes. Okay. Most of the games sold, I think 60%, are private sector now.
Oh,
yeah.
That's very interesting. How do you think that pinballs will, like, eventually, in the future, be, like, moving on?
I was thinking that they would eventually fade away to nothing, but I've seen some games and people are still into it. But then again, if you ever go, they got a thing called the Pinball Expo that's in like a week from now. That's over in Wheeling.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the biggest pinball show in the country. If you go over there, you're gonna see people who look like me. I'm not gonna see a bunch of kids running around. So I think when my generation dies out, pinball's gonna die out.
Mm-hmm. So like, do you believe that the pinball industry right now is only being sustained by the hobbies of people that have?
Yeah, I do. And there's a few places that still have them. What's that adult game place? Like a Chuck E. Cheese for adults. What's that one called?
Dave and Buster's.
Yeah. I went to Dave and Buster's one time, and it was cool. You know, they had some cool games, and they had a Stern Family Guy, and that was awesome. And Stern also made Shrek, which was a same play field, the same thing, just that they peeled the Family Guy one off and put the Shrek one on and changed the plastic instead of having, you know, the Family Guy guys and the donkey and whoever else. But yeah, that's basically it, because if you go to any bar now, you know, you don't see pinball machines. If you go to the bowling alleys, you hardly see anything.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really have arcade rooms and, you know, games.
Yeah.
And when you do go to arcades, I remember taking my kids to arcades when they were small, like Harlem and Irving. It's like a mall over here. Anyway, we go in there and everything was electronical. I said, "Man, there's not even a pinball machine in here." So, yeah, I think it'll fade away. What do you guys think? Do you guys ever play pinball? Any of you?
Yeah, I've actually played pinball before. We had I went to a place back. I'm from Mexico,
mm-hmm.
so like, there was a place further south of Mexico where like it's. It's that the whole purpose of that town is to like keep it like in the old times for like, you know,
okay.
What's it called? When people visit, you know?
Yeah,
like
so that's what they're selling.
Like tourists,
point is.
Like
tourism,
it's
yeah.
a tourist town. And then we would go with my family to a place to eat, and they would just have like a pinball there. So like it's pretty old style still.
Yeah.
And they're still playing.
But there's no new places you guys hang out. Mm-hmm. You know, you guys hang out anywhere? You just go to school or?
No, my, I guess newest experience with pinball has just been like the Microsoft pinball on the computer.
Well, it's gonna change today. I'm gonna have you on every one of these games.
All right, looking forward to trying something new or old.
New to you, old to the industry, huh?
So, like, with this, do you think that eventually this hobby will like bring skills to other hobbies that you currently have? Has it brought any skills to the other hobbies?
Well, there. Depends on the hobbies. Like right now, my hobby first started out with Coke machines, and like I said, I had to go to school. So what I did was I tried to learn something in the refrigeration part of it because that's what it was. It's a Coke machine, you know.
Yeah,
cool stuff. So man, I lost track of that. What was the question again?
So like, does to the skills from these hobbies will be implemented?
I was trying to figure out where I was going with that. Okay. So I learned that. Just for the sole purpose of just learning how to fix that machine. But the whole point was I wanted to read that little square card that had all the lines and circles on it. And I'm like, the heck is that? And it was a schematic, an electrical schematic.
Mm-hmm.
And once I learned that, I was like, oh, my God, this thing's so freaking easy. This is a thermostat. It's a compressor. It's two motors. There's nothing to it. So then I took that information, and once I started working on this stuff, I was able to work in games, except these schematics are like this big.
Yeah,
they're massive, and you got to follow, you know, one circuit at a time. All right, so basically the whole point of that was I learned electrical for the one hobby, which led into another hobby, and now if my refrigerator breaks, I could fix that. So that's a home use. If I need to rewire the house, I could do that because I know how to do electrical now. And if I want to fix a car, I can trace that out. So yeah, it does
transfer
over, and it's great. You know, you learn a couple things, you can use it for forever.
Do you ever see like this hobby ever becoming some sort of like a business, economic?
No, not really, because you would have to get a game basically at like $0, because they're all so old. To get one to work, you have to take it all apart, and there's a lot of little pieces.
Just a lot of time and like money that you need to.
So you could spend 80 hours on something that you're gonna sell for $100. So now you just worked, you know, did all this work for what, a dollar something an hour? So financially, it's not worth it for me.
Yeah,
I did one game for one guy because. He had a ball bowler, like I have a bowling machine, and I told him, I said, he's like, oh yeah, can you fix it? I'm like, I said, yeah, how much time? There's a lot of time in it. And most people are like, I'll give you $100. I'm like, yeah, I ain't gonna cover it, dude. So this guy said, well, how much? I said, I'll do $1,500. And he said, yeah, no problem. So I got $1,500 to fix his game. So you could make money at it, but I like a job where it's steady and you have
it'll
insurance
be like a
and you know, you have a 401. Yeah, so it's more of a hobby. And I have sold things, like I said, when they get closer to the door, they go and something else takes its place. So it could be lucrative, but you would have to do that just for your, just for the whole thing. And you'd have to go around like, you know, pickers and that, go find crap and fix it. And it's not good for me. So for me, no. That was a long, lengthy explanation for no, wasn't it?
No, it was perfect. It was perfect. It was like, you get to know everything. So, like, with this hobby of yours, do you think, like, it's like the important, like, the essence to be passionate about it? Like,
yeah,
you can just be
any hobby, you have to be passionate about it. Otherwise, you ain't going to do it. You know, you just collect stamps and you bought one and you're like, okay, I'm done. I don't think you're passionate because you don't really have a hobby either.
Definitely. So, relating back to when Todd used to bring his friends over, do you think that pinball by itself is like a personal thing? Like only I play pinball, or do I like play pinball with friends and see the highest score or something like that?
You talking about as far as him and his friends playing, or me playing?
like, do you think pinball will be a individual basis or like a group community basis?
Well, if you're downstairs here alone, I guarantee it's individual, unless you're schizophrenic and you got some buddies you're talking to. But if you have a party, then of course it's you know, everybody's trying to beat the other guy's score, so it's very communal. You know, everybody's you know, gets into it then. But generally, it's just like a, to me, it's like more of a one player deal.
One to one thing.
But you know, most all my games except for one are multiplayer, and I do have one that's an individual game, and it's not very popular. So it does seem that, you know, because when I'm down here alone, you know, I just play by myself. I just play a game here and there. You know, but when I do have people here, I do notice that they do congregate over games that are multiple player, because it's more fun. It's more challenging. You're playing against someone instead of, you know. Would you rather throw the ball against the wall and catch it, or would you rather throw it to another guy and he'll throw it back to you? You know, it's more fun to always play with someone else. So that part of it, I'd say, yeah, people would be, you know, hanging out with it, but it still could be either or. Depends on, you know,
the situation at hand.
Yeah, yeah, because you're not gonna. I don't think you're gonna have people flocking over here saying, "Man, let's go look at that one pinball game." You know, but when you have a group of people, they do flock around.
Yeah.
Individual things, and the pinball is popular. Actually, that's one game I never really had to work on too much. The baseball is one of the favorites, and ball bowling machine is a favorite.
The one over here.
Yeah, that long one there. Yeah, it's like 13 foot long.
Yeah, that's a very impressive bowling machine. So, do you ever see yourself as a moving on from this hobby, or do you think
moving out of it?
Yeah. Like,
well, I had arthritis really bad in my hands, and I got to the point where I wasn't going to do anymore. But then I discovered Enbrel, and I started injecting myself, and now I can move my fingers. Where before I couldn't, so I ended up buying more crap. You know, didn't learn from the last time, right? Now that was an genetic thing. So, but yeah, continue.
Yeah, of course. So we were thinking of also asking about yourself as a person, like when you were growing older, young. When you were
growing
young,
older.
Growing older.
That was yesterday.
Yeah, definitely. What was your favorite toy when you were like a kid, child?
My favorite toy had to be the Marx, MARX. That was a company. They had a game called Electro Shot Shooting Gallery. And what it was a game about, maybe 2.5 feet long by, you know, like a foot wide, and it had targets. They had little ducks that went in a circle, and then it had like a little clown head that bounced around, some things you got to knock back and forth, holes to make, they were smaller. And the cool thing was, you had a machine gun, and it shot BBs. They were contained in this device. So yeah, that was like the ultimate game. And they had single shot, which, yeah, who's gonna do that? You got a machine gun, man. Do you want to shoot individual pellets, or do you want to shoot 10 at a time? Oh, I'm going 10 at a time. So it was funny. That was like an arcade game, which I never really put two and two together until I was down here one day, and I noticed that my Bally Sharpshooter is a large electro shot shooting gallery, because this one actually has balls that are propelled by a vacuum system, and it shoots at targets. And I was like, that's freaking awesome. I got one of these. So I guess something seeded way back in my brain there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because that was like 1971 that I had this game. A little while ago.
And now, when did you get this one?
I got that one, I think, about 4 years ago, something like that.
Since relatively new.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a 60s game. Most of my games are from the 60s. The pinball is from 76. That's like the newer one. And my newest game, which I consider new, was actually out when I was in high school. It was a game by Atari. I'm sure you guys heard of Atari, right?
Yeah.
And it's Pole Position. It's a race car game. And it was the first game that I remember being at the arcade playing this. And it was the first game when you actually were driving a car and you made that turn, the background actually moved. And it was like, wow, this is so realistic.
Yeah.
You know? You thought it was so cool. And now you look at it and say, man, that's so lame. You know, like Call of Duty and these other games.
Yeah,
like, it's like, yeah. Yeah, I got a little mountain going back and forth. And we were all like, ooh, look at that. You know?
So who bought you the electro shooting gallery?
Santa Claus.
Santa Claus.
Yeah, that's what I was told. But it said Santa on there, and I'm sticking with it.
Of course, yeah. He's always a good person.
He
brought me a lot of gifts as well.
Yeah, I don't think he brings kids machine guns anymore, but back in 71 he did.
So, moving on from these pinball machines, what is the thing that you most like about them? Like, the fact that you...
About pinball machines?
Yeah. Not about the gameplay, about the...
I like the sounds. I like the bumpers kicking the ball around, the action of it. I like the old-fashioned chimes, and they got chimes and they got bells for different things. I like when you get you win a free game, you hear a knock, it's basically a selenite kicking a piece of wood. You know, before when I was a kid, I was like, wow, what's that sound?
Mm.
And now I know what it is, it kind of takes the fun out of it, but that's about it. And, you know, because as a kid, I hated, I didn't hate pinball, but I was really bad at it. And it costs a quarter. You know, I can go to the store and I can get a couple of Jolly Ranchers and some gum for a quarter. Why do I want to waste it on this thing? But I used to watch people and I used to enjoy, you know, just, you know, pretending, not pretending I'm playing, but, you know, listening to it. That was good enough for me. You know, now it's cool because when I play it, I can take my quarter back. You know, open the door, take that thing right out of there. Yeah,
so
I think now the games are like a buck or more than a buck.
Yeah.
I'm walking around at Dave and Buster's with my quarter. Where, oh, what is that dollar? When did these change?
What other type of games did you play when you were growing up?
Shuffle alleys. I liked the bowling shuffle alleys. That was like that's the one that I saw that was at that bar that my grandfather would go to when. And at the time, I remember going to my dad, hey, can we have, it was a dime, so at that time it was a dime. Hey, can I have a dime? He's like, no, I can't give you a dime to play that. So we'd actually literally take the puck and slide it back and forth and go under the pins, and that's all we would do, you know, because he was too cheap to give us a dime, you know. So some stranger at the bar is like, hey, give the kid a dime. He'd give him a dime, and we'd get to play it, you know. So it was kind of cool, but I always liked those games.
Yeah.
Those are my favorite. That's one right over there, the second one over.
Yeah,
that's a cool game.
So besides, so what were your favorite things to do when you were growing up, playing these games or like going to
watch
the movie?
No, I didn't like playing these games because these games weren't. There wasn't that many arcades around, and there wasn't really any diners that had games, so they were kind of far and few between.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not my neighborhood. I didn't see them. We had an arcade that was there for probably about half a year, but then you started getting like too much gangs and stuff hanging out there and, you know, robbing people, and they closed it down.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, that's about it. I forgot what we're talking about again.
What was your
so many questions now?
Your favorite thing to do for fun.
Oh, okay, yeah, it wasn't pinball. I live by a river. So I would go by the river, and we would make spears, bows and arrows, and climb trees. And it was right by the girls' dorm of North Park College, so we, you know, climb up higher and look in the window. Hey, look at that.
We've got cute a bow and arrow, girl.
Yeah. No, I used to play. At North Park College. We used to play football over there, and my favorite sport would probably be like we used to play baseball. I used to like playing baseball. The games that we always played, though, where we would play hide and seek, but we would use flashlights at night, so that was kind of cool. And we had made it you could go around the whole block, you know, and different people's yards or whatever. I'm sure people could see us walking around with flashlights in their yards and probably weren't excited by that, but no one ever complained, you know, because you hide in trees, you can hide anywhere. So that was it. We would always wait till sundown and then start playing these games.
That's
or wiffle ball. In the 70s, Chicago went from having a real dim light for streetlights to that bright orange one that they're trying to get rid of now.
Yeah.
When that first came out, you know, it was like daylight out. because you're so used to being so dim. So yeah, the whole street open, and you would, you know, play whistle ball. So that's what we did.
So like, when you were like growing up.
Yeah, sorry, old fine.
Yeah. Did the nationwide pinball ban affect you in any way? Did you like care about it even?
I never heard of that. Because, like I said, that didn't affect anything with me. But from what I read before, they had pinball bans in New York till the 70s until
mm-hmm.
they proved that the game was a game of skill.
And not gambling.
And the guy basically had he was playing this one game, the one machine, and they're like, no, I'll play this one. They had a spare one just in case it failed, and he wasn't familiar with that. They took a potluck shot saying, I'm going to shoot this ball over in his hole, and he did it. And then the board or whoever in New York said, okay, it's skill. But... that was the only ban I heard. That was recently I read that. But I know back in the 30s, they were considered gambling devices because they weren't skill.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of bans on them. Actually, if you look behind you, that machine there is from 1940. Yeah, that was made in Chicago. Actually, just about every game was made in Chicago. Chicago had so many manufacturers back then. That's by a company called Bally. I think you guys should have heard of Bally, right?
Mm-hmm. They did your sharpshooter?
Yeah. Yeah, so Bally is a Bally high hand. That's a poker machine. So that machine actually pays out. But if it's illegal, wherever they sold it, you flip a couple switches in there, then it just gives you credits. So then they get away with that. But then what they used to do, even though they said it's legal because it's only credits, say it's at a bar. The bartender, you know, you say, I got 37 credits, he would pay out whatever 37 credits is worth.
Yeah.
And there's a button in the back that you push, and it clears your credits. So there's ways around their gambling laws that they had back then. Trust me, these guys, they're not going to go under, you know, going broke. You know, they're going to find a way to get around it. So that's a pretty good example for that, though.
Yeah, that's right. Has anybody talked to you about, like, in any negative way about, like, you know, fixing pinball machines?
Yeah, these three guys came over to my house today, man. They did badgering the hell out of me.
No.
But you do get that title. They're like, I remember going to a party, and this, I didn't care for this because it was my cousin or whatever. Instead of saying, here's my cousin, Larry, they said, oh, here's a pinball repairman. I'm like, I don't do that for a living. I'm Larry. I'm not the pinball repairman. But that's about it. But, you know, I do the same thing. Like, if you've painted my car, say, yeah, he's a painter. Here's a painter. Here's, you know, whatever. But no.
An interviewer. Right?
Yeah. There's a guy who won't leave me alone. Yeah. But no, there's nothing negative. What do you get an example of something negative? Because I can't think of anything. What would you say negative about someone?
I don't know. Like... Some people like, oh, you know, if you repair a car, you're like, oh, he's just like...
He's just a mechanic.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, well, that's... I'm not in a rich neighborhood, so that don't happen here. That's only when you go to Northbrook and Highland Park, right?
So do you believe that the pinball's influence on the culture goes beyond that of just the gaming and arcade world? Like,
yeah, actually I do, because... pinball basically was associated with, say, for a term like a badass, you know, like look at your TV shows. You had came out with Happy Days, and you know they got a bunch of lame guys in there, so they had to throw one guy who's supposed to be cool. They threw the Fonz in there. What does he do? He plays pinball.
Hmm.
You look at the James Dean flicks, and you know, there's James Dean. What's he doing? He's playing pinball. So it was associated with in the 50s as like a rebellion, because also you got to remember at that time.
It was illegal
in some areas, and they thought of it more so of like, it's like a brainwashing mechanism that's stealing my kids' money, you know? You know, so you go there and play, and that's all. Yeah, it had its not just a game, I think it had a lot with society, you know, the way society was. And
yeah.
Now I don't think so.
Yeah, no.
Back then, because now it's like all pinball, you know.
It's just a game of flippers.
Yeah. But then it was like, you know, because like, you know, it was like we're saying it's illegal and this and that, so. That's always more of a notorious thing than.
It was more of like what they made it to be than what it actually was.
Yeah, it's just a game, but you know, they made it into basically media and whoever else, lawmakers at the time made it into like a mob thing.
Yeah.
You know, like it's bad because it's gambling or this and that, or it must be mob run, or what, it came out of Chicago. Come on, it has to be the mob. You know? So. Yeah, so I think it just got a bad rap, you know.
What do you think it makes a good pinball game? Like?
One that I can actually score on. I like the basic ones like this, where it's a wide open field. You have areas, little targets. If you hit A and B, and then you drop it in the hole, you get a free ball or if it goes down this thing after you hit these, you get an extra ball, you know, stuff like that. I like that. Like the new games, I don't like. They're too busy. You guys ever play
hit this thing?
You ever
to
play
get
the new games?
Yeah.
You see the new games?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just all lights flashing, and then balls flipping everywhere. I'm like, it's playing itself. I don't have to do nothing. You know, so to me, like I said, it's not as skilled.
Do you notice the difference between companies on how they style a pinball machine?
No, they all pretty much follow suit. If one came out with an idea that was working, I guarantee you the other companies are going to come out with the same idea or something similar. So
yeah.
I think it's, no, if you even look back, I mean, like I got this old pinball machine here. One guy, I think Bally invented the flip, the bumpers. After they invented the bumpers, guess
what?
Jenko did the bumpers. Then you had Chicago Coin did the bumpers. And you had, who else was that? United did the bumpers. Williams did the bumpers. Everybody said, oh, hey, bumpers, yeah, it's working for them. Let's do it. Then some guy said, hey, let's put flippers in. And they hit them backwards, actually. You know how they work this way? They actually worked this way originally. Yeah, and they don't work too well. It's really hard to control it. And the first game with flippers, actually, they had flippers on the sides and nothing in the middle. And I think it was Jenko actually put them down at the bottom. And then people were like, wow, you can get that ball back up there and you can save it from falling, you know, into the out hole. So guess what? Next year, everybody had flippers on the bottom, and that's where it stayed forever. They're still there. They're still there, and that was like in the 50s, 40s. No, 30s. 40, well, somewhere in that era. A long time ago.
Yeah.
Before I was even born.
So who's your favorite pinball manufacturer? Is there one?
Gottlieb actually is supposed to be really good. I never had a Gottlieb, so I don't know. But that, you always hear people talking about like Gottlieb is like the wedge hedge. They call it wedge head. They call them because they were long here and they came down to a wedge. Okay, that's how all their back glasses, like the back section of the back, the back box, they're all like that. And for some reason, Gottlieb. And it was supposed to be king of the pinballs. I never had one, and you know, so for me, I'm happy with my Chicago Coin or my old Bally, you know. But everybody had like their favorites. Like if you want to buy a baseball game, you bought a Williams, and so I got a Williams baseball game because it's better than the United or anybody else's baseball game. If you wanted to buy a Shuffle Alley, you bought a United. Because they were the Cadillac and Shuffle Alley. So every manufacturer had something that they were well known for, and Gottlieb was the one for pinball. I just don't have one to show you.
Moving on to like arcade games, do you know like what makes a good or a bad arcade game? Like?
From just watching people, a good arcade game is one where you don't blow someone out of the water, you know what I'm saying? And you can come back at the end and win. So you always got a chance. That's where it's fun. You know, if you're playing someone and like, say you're playing someone darts and they got everything but one and you got all of them, well, that's no fun. You know, so you got to have something where you can come back and have a challenge. But my favorite games were always shuffles and shooting galleries. Because I just thought they were fun.
They were mostly skill games as well. Like you get
well, the old shooting galleries weren't really skilled as much because they had targets that were actually upside down, and you would hit contact with your when you turned your rifle, these fingers would actually line up with other contacts.
Mm-hmm.
So you just had to be in the general area. And when you hit it, it would send power to a selenite, which would drop the target down. But it's shining up through a mirror, so it looks like it's, you know, this way. Looks like it's actually, you know, straight up and down, but actually it was really laying on the ground. And it, and because of the illusion of the target being here and the mirror being over here, it looked like, you know, you're, yeah.
The pizza's here.
All right. It looked like you're actually got an area like this, but it looked like it's 5 foot long. And it was a great effect, and it was fun. But as far as skill in that one is the only gun game that sharpshooter, there was three of them that they made, that actually you have to shoot a projectile, and there's no, you know, if you miss, you miss.
Mm-hmm.
If you hit it, you hit it. So.
Alright. So around what time did you exactly start with the pinball repair business?
17 years ago.
17 years ago.
Yeah, a guy gave me my first machine.
Alright. And approximately per machine, how much time do you spend, like, repairing it?
They all vary, but generally, at least 40 hours easy, usually about 80 or more. One time I was working on this one guy's machine, that guy had charged money. He had a gearbox that was jammed. I had a take all the cams off, and you got to keep these in the same order, because if you flip them or drop them, it's the brains of the outfit. So you got to put all the cams, mark them, put them over here. Then you got to take the gearbox, you got to drill it out, take it apart. Then you got to get everything seized. You have to free it up, and then the gears are shot. And it's not like you can go to the store and buy gears for these things.
Yeah.
You know, where do you get parts for a 50-year-old game?
Yeah.
You either get another game and gut it, or you fix it. So then I finagled the gears and bent them and filed them and got them to work. So that alone probably took me, you know, 10 hours or more just for a stinking gearbox. Where most people just say, okay, it's done. Gearbox is fine, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it all varies. The longest thing I ever worked on, I think, was my Pop-A-Rat popcorn machine. Worked on it months. Actually, that Stoner coffee machine, I took that apart 6 years ago. And I'm just like, I better put it together while I still remember how it goes. And I got a lot of pictures I'm looking at. So if in a hobby like this, it varies. It depends on, like you said earlier, how much passion you have for it. I don't have much passion for that anymore. I'm like tired of it. So I just do it.
You just fix it to get it out of the way.
It's aimed at the door. I'm just going to finish it up and then out it goes. But it takes at least a good 40 hours. Because, you know, like I said, you have to take all these things apart, and I wish I could really pull one of these out to show you the back, but if you like, I can send you a picture of one I took apart, and I can just show you all the parts. I got a little pan of parts. This is just the score reels. You know what a bread pan is? You know, you used to cook bread in years ago? A little pan like this, about that high,
mm-hmm.
like that. Well, them score reels would fit in there. Not the reels itself, all the parts, big mound of parts. There's a lot of parts, you know. Yeah, so it varies. Okay, you guys want to eat now, or you guys want to...
Yeah, we can definitely pause it and go get something.
All right, you want to pause and...
All right. So, Mr. Wilson, we're talking about pinball machines and how you repair them, but how do you actually find these machines?
Word of mouth is the best way. It's usually the cheapest way, because if someone wants to get rid of it, and then you have an opportunity to, you know, get it, fix it. And if it's too bad, they can gut it. Nowadays, Craigslist is a really good site. eBay or GreedBay, you know, it's getting worse. But eBay was a good site, but it's not too good now. Then the last one is there's a show I like to go to. It's called the Chicagoland Antique Slot Machine and Jukebox Show. Long title. In Pheasant Run, in St. Charles, at Pheasant Run, whatever Pheasant Run is, motel, convention center, there we go.
Yeah.
And it's twice a year, and on Friday, it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and I'm going off the track here a little bit, but it used to be on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you would go into these places. This is before eBay, okay? and they would have all kinds of stuff. It was like, you know, like a kid in a candy store. It's like, oh my God, look at all this stuff, you know. And it was cheap. You could buy things, fix them up. Now, because of eBay, you know, it's the largest show of this kind in the States, actually in the world, because you get the people from the Netherlands coming in, England. You always, there's always someone in there. But anyway, before eBay, that's where dealers from all over the place would pack up their goods and come here to sell. And then when it asked after eBay, they're like, you know, eBay, like, well, why do I want to drive to Chicago when I can just have someone buy it and they can send a shipper to me? So, you know, that was a lot better. And of course, it went off on a tangent. What were we talking about again?
Yeah, it was perfectly like, how do you find machines?
How do you find machines?
Yeah.
So anyway, nowadays, since if you go to that show now, it's like Friday, Saturday, Sunday. If you go inside, it's all big time dealers and everything is highly polished and highly expensive. But what the public don't realize is if you go in the back where there's everybody parks their cars and trailers, that's where the wheeling and dealing is going on. You could pick up a game for $100. You could find some guy leaving and he just wants to get rid of something and you know, buy for next to nothing. And that's where all the real action is for someone like me. I don't even go in the show because, you know,
there's
that's,
no point.
Yeah, that's for show. That's for people going there, you know, rich people basically going to buy the stuff. Your average Joe wants to just fix something and get something that's, you know, you wheel and deal in the back. But that's where I would go because it's huge. Actually, it's coming up in November. You guys should check it out.
What
I see your excitement
day?
Already in your faces.
What specific day of November, though?
It's November, I'm not sure. It's usually around the 11th, something like that. It's in November and April. And like I said, it's called Chicagoland. If you just go to Google and hit Chicagoland Jukebox Show, and it'll pop up. It's been going on for like 30-something years.
It's definitely good news. So once you get these machines,
yes.
What's your first process to actually like start fixing them?
Well, before you even buy a machine, first you got to analyze it. You're not just going to go and say, oh, I'll buy this, unless it's something really rare or something you want or something you need a part off of. First thing you do is I look at the back glass. Is the back glass cracked? Is the back glass broken? Well, if it is, you're not going to find another one unless you buy another machine. You can't just buy these at the store.
Mm-hmm.
Next thing you do, you open it up and you look for mouse and rat damage, cockroaches, stuff like that. Because some of these things have been laying around in people's basements or wherever. And critters like getting in there and eating the wires. So then you got to look at your stepping units and you look for any broken wires. So if you look at all this stuff and then it's like a mess inside, you don't want it because it's just about near impossible to fix it unless you really got a really passion for that machine. So, dang, it's going off on tangents again here.
No, it's fine, yeah. This is the process you do. After that, what you... checking the wires.
Yes, okay, for buying a machine. Yeah, because I was going to say, yeah. So if you're going to buy the machine, you have to check it out first. So you just basically check to make sure nothing's missing, nothing's broke, and that's it. And that's your first process. Then after you get the machine, what you have to do is you have to go through it. And I mean, you don't just like look and see if the fuse is blown or get a can of WD-40 and start spraying the crap out of it. That just, you know, makes it worse. So what you do is you have to take every single piece apart. Mm-hmm. Anything that's mechanical and will move has to be taken apart because you have old grease on there. The grease is well known to turn into a solid. It solidifies and it becomes glue. So your moving parts don't move or they don't move well. So you have to literally take them apart. I take it apart and then I use acetone and Q-tips and I clean it that way. And then when I'm done, I use a dry lube like Teflon, PTFE, Teflon lube. Super lube is the product I use. And you spray the parts and you put them back together. And then once you're done with all the parts, this is like, could take, you know, a good week. Once you're done with all that, then you fire it up. Well, first you check for shorts in the motor, shorts in the coils. You just look for shorts to ground. And then you fire it up to say everything's good. And it's still not working. Now you have to go troubleshoot it. You already know that the problem isn't because of cleaning. Because most people will say, yeah, I got this machine, but it's not scoring right. Can you fix it? It's only going to take a minute, right? I'm like, no, man, you got to take it all apart. You know, they don't understand the mechanics of it.
Mm-hmm.
So after everything's done and like that, and you're going through the schematics, you got to figure out, because sometimes you have a switch And you might have it bent a little bit too much, where it's too close, it's closing too fast, or opening too late. And you got to understand these things, when they open and close, there's also contact fingers that are motorized that go around and they hit these rivets. And each one of these rivets have a wire, so it's timed. And these things have to close at the exact time that this is supposed to be in this position. If it doesn't do that, you're in trouble. So now you got to figure it out. So there's a big process of getting one of these things to work. And if you get it fine-tuned and it's working good, some of them you never have to work on. I got that baseball machine when Todd was probably about 5. I never had to touch that one. It works great. But yeah, that's what you got to do to them.
And does that one still work? Like, has the grease solidified or anything?
No, because I took it all apart and used the Teflon. The Teflon doesn't solidify too much. I do find that on the bowling machines, they do start solidifying. So I do periodically take the score reels apart again or something like that. But that's only because I put too much grease on when I first did it. Like when I was first starting out, I figured, you know, a little grease is good, a lot's got to be better, but it's actually worse. But the Teflon doesn't solidify like the old grease. The old grease, honest to God, you grab the part, you can't even turn it with your hand. It's like glue, you know. So sometimes what I do is I take a torch, and I hit it with a torch, because you got to watch out, because all the wires back then were cloth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole thing will flare up.
Yeah.
So you hit it with a torch, low torch, and then you get it to move. And then you have to soak it in the acetone after it cools, because that's highly flammable too. You know? But yeah, it's a big process.
So in this process, have you ever had a machine that like you came into a problem that you just couldn't repair?
Yeah, actually, I bought the pinball machine. They used to come in two versions. They would come in. That's a 4-player version, and that one was called Jukebox by Chicago Coin. They made a single player one, so it was either single or two player, and that was called Soundstage. Same exact play field, same exact parts, just basically different backlash, less players. So, you know, I bought it cheap and I was going to use it for parts because I needed the photo sensor. There's a photo eye in there. When something spins around, a light bulb's on there, and that's how you get your points. Mm-hmm. Well, the photo eye went bad. I was 25 years old at the time. So I bought this other machine, and I was just gonna gut it and take that out. And I'm like, I hate doing that. So I'm like, let's see if I can get it to work. I went through everything on that thing, took it apart, did all that. There's something I just couldn't figure out. It was the only one that got me. Yeah, the only one.
There's always the one.
There's always the one. So I had the pleasure of destroying it. I gutted it, and I took all the parts out, and I know the coils are good, and that anything electronic I just threw out because I figured that's where the problem was. Because this was like the first year that they used electronics. It's like half electromechanical and half electronic. So 76 was a turning point for for pinball machines, going from electromechanical, which just means electrical would be the solenoids and relays pulling in, and the mechanical to actual boards. Because, like I said, those stepper units I was talking about, the fretted timing, that was your first form of electronics, you can say.
Mm.
But, yeah, so anyway, I sold the back glass, and that I actually got like $200 for it. I probably paid $100. I made $100 on it, and I had the pleasure of destroying it. So.
That's what she gets for not being repaired.
That's right. Yeah. I'll show you.
And so, like, what are the basic parts of a pinball machine? So you mentioned the backlash.
Yeah. Well, it depends. Like, I got a 1930s pinball machine, and the only thing that's common from the very beginning till now is you have a play field.
Mm-hmm.
You have a plunger to shoot the ball up. Okay, and you have pins. The older ones were all pins because pinball came from, basically, you had a board with pins, nails, and you had a ball, and that was pinball. Okay, and I think it came from the French game bagatelle or bagatelle. I don't know how to pronounce it. I'm not French, but anyway, if you look at my 30s machine, it's all pins, all nails. And you look at that one, there's only a couple still left, just so the ball don't sneak through or something, you know.
Mm.
But that's the only thing that's common on every machine, and legs. you know, body legs, because the 30 ones didn't have back glasses, they had back boxes. They didn't have none of that stuff. They had no electricity. Well, they did have batteries to ring a bell, or something like that. So they would use dry cell batteries. But nowadays, the common theme on every pinball machine would be, of course, the flippers. Every game you see has flippers, and they're all at least on the bottom. You might have them on top or whatever, but there's always a pair on the bottom. Of course, you got your flipper buttons. You still got the same things I mentioned, but you have bumpers that pop the ball back and forth. All of them are going to have some sort of like rubber band and switch that will kick the ball around, so you got movement. And generally, most of them will all have some form of drop hole or target somewhere, dropping for either points or you lose a ball. You know,
mm-hmm.
But basically, like I said, there's like only three things that I can think of that are, and the glass. There's another one. They all have a glass, right? So you can't cheat.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they even have tilts then. Tilts came a little later, you know, the first pinballs. And then the first tilts that they had was basically a round cup and a little, like a golf tee in the middle. And when you reset it, the golf tee would fall down and the cup was like domed in the bottom. So the ball would naturally go to the center. And then when you push the plunge, the coin mech in, they didn't have the drop coins like we have now. They actually had that slide lever coin mechs. Okay? So you push it in, that piece would drop down, the ball would reset in the middle, and when you pull it out, that little stem would come up, so the ball would sit on there. And that was your first tilt. It didn't end your game. It was just like if you hit it, it would fall off the little pedestal. And it was just like you're supposed to say, oh, well, the game's over. I guess I'm not going to play anymore. But, you know, that's stupid. Of course you're going to play. And then eventually they made electric where it would fail your game and then you would lose the ball or something like that. But, yeah, so that's about all I could think of on those.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, nowadays, lights, and more lights.
So, like, do you think that the complexity and of between the high and the low end pinball machines would be, like, a lot of different like electronic components, like lights and all of that.
Yes, the higher end games, like I said, they nowadays they would have movies. Basically, they'll cut away to a clip, or they'll have animated. I'm trying to think of what they call those. Basically, animated screens where you see something going by, like they'll spell something, or you'll see like, you know, something like kind of like a marquee. You know, you would see it like
ticker,
yeah. Kind of like if you see in the old baseball games, like the things go boom, and those like say, oh, nuts or something like that. They would have that. Dot matrix,
oh.
That's what it is, dot matrix. So they spell things, this and that. And like I said, I don't like the newer games because they're too busy. I like just a laid-back game.
Yeah.
But it's too much nowadays. But, yeah, the complexity, the change basically is your boards. You know, everything's electronic, of course. And you got a lot more sound, a lot more visual, and a lot more action. A lot of things going on. Did I get it right? This is it was like a bonus question.
Do you happen to have any tricks for repairing, like any?
Just like I told you. The very first thing you have to do is take it all apart, clean it, lube it, put it back together, then figure it out. Yeah. And the only tool that I would suggest buying, there's a place called Pinball Warehouse in New York, and they sell all kinds of stuff, schematics, tools, and this and that. There's just like, it looks like an L, and it's just a contact switch tool that you use to bend the switches, because a lot of times they get out of alignment. So normally close, it goes like this to close, and it's still open. Well, it's not going to work. So you take the switch, you bend this part up, so now when it closes, it makes. So it's just a way to get in there, and you got a long stem to stick through things and twist it, and then you got the short one for more leverage. It's a good tool.
And what is the part that you usually get like more stuck? I don't know, like, what's the hardest part of repairing a machine? Is there one? Or is it like...
Score reels to me is the biggest pain just because there's so many of the damn things on the old games, you know. Like that bowling one over there. Let's see, score reels, frame, you had how many bowlers. You got 4, 8, 12, 24, 25, 26 of those with probably about, you know, like 15, 25 parts in each one that have to come apart and be cleaned tediously with a, you know, Q-tip and that, and then grease it and put it back together. That's a day's work right there. You know, and then when we're about halfway done, you're like, I'm not done, man. I'm out of here. You know, it's a pain, but if you don't do it, it's not going to work. And the sad thing is, I got a problem with that one particular game. I got to get back there again, and that's going to be interesting.
And so, like, once you fix them, what do you do with them? Do you just keep them here?
I just only buy games that I want. Because I don't do it for a living. I don't do it for to make any money on it. So anything I want, I buy it, I fix it, I use it, I enjoy it. When I don't like it no more, out the door it goes, and something else will take its place.
So that when you mean out the door, it's like trash can or?
No, I sell it.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll sell it.
Yeah,
and I haven't lost money in any of them yet. But again, your labor ends up being like, you know, $1 an hour if you really figure it out. But like. Actually, that pinball machine, I paid $100 for it, and that thing was in mint shape, you know. That thing's from 76, and even the little button that you push, that red button on the side, that should be just totally silver now from people hitting it. So there wasn't a lot of plays on that game. And that baseball one cost me $250, but I could sell it easily for $2,000.
Wow.
that's a good profit, you know.
And you didn't work on that baseball, right?
I didn't do much to it. No, it was actually, it was a little stiff. I just played it, and that was it. I did oil the motors. There's a lot of motors in that one. The cool thing is it's mechanical men in the back. It has a mechanical back box. So when you hit a single, a man jumps up and runs to first.
Hmm.
And when you hit a triple, he goes zoop to third, and the guy goes to home and just ducks out. You know, he just goes back underneath. And so that's a cool game. That's a cool game. You can play two-player where one guy pitches, one guy bats, you know. And the neat thing is they have, like, a magnet. And when you throw a metal ball against something that's magnetized like that, at the tangent of the circle of the magnet, it curves. So it has a curve ball. So you watch the ball, and all of a sudden it's like, vroom. It's like, whoa, man, how the hell they do that, you know? 1960s. But it doesn't register strikes or balls, so that's the only bad thing. So you can sit there if you really want it. You can just sit there and have the guy pitch to you like 50 times until he's tired. You know, just tell me you lost, and I'll hit the ball. Yeah. No, but it's a fun game. It's a fun game. It's one of the most popular ones down here.
So, what is the oldest machine you've got?
The oldest machine I got is on the floor. It's a 1934. 34 or 36 Bally called Streamline. It's a pinball machine that has a railroad theme, train theme. At the time, they had trains that were, they call them Streamline, where they, instead of looking like the old locomotives, you know, like in the cowboy movies, they actually came down, and it was the Art Deco era. So the little trains on there, it looked like little metal bars, but if you get down there and actually look at it, you're like, oh, it's little trains. So it's a train theme machine. And oldest one I had was from like 30, I think it was 3 or 30, 34. It was another Bally. But that's the oldest one I got.
So have you gotten any machine that just like reached the end of their life? Like they just like flat out?
No, because the nice thing is with these old machines is they never die. They just get out of alignment or they get gunked up. But
so they're always fixable.
Yeah, they're fixable because, man, they made stuff really good in the 40s, 30s, 50s, 60s. If I bought a machine now, give it 30 years, I guarantee you won't be able to fix it. You know. But these things are, for example, let me give you a quick example. My Bally High Hand, that's a poker machine. The payout, the nickels back then had a different material. So I tried to get old nickels. But the only thing is, I'm not going to buy really nice nickels, so I buy nickels that are kind of flat. They're not really worth anything, but it's the same material. But when it's in the coin tube, when a payout comes, you got this motor, just basically like a power driver, just bam, bam, pushing these coins out, okay? Well, because they're thin, it jammed. And I was just at a party, you know, I had Christmas, I think it was, and all of a sudden, me and Kyle, my one son who helps me work on things, and we're like, what the hell's that smell? It smells like something burning, you know? And I'm like walking around, and I thought it was this one machine. I'm like, nah, it's not over here. And we walk somewhere else, all of a sudden, like, oh crap, it's this thing. So I pull it out and reach in the back, and that motor was almost red hot. I mean, it burnt my hand just touching it, because it was just, it was energized for like hour and a half, 2 hours, and it's supposed to be a momentary motor where it goes boom, 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 like that. This thing was just drawing high amps all this time. So I'm like, wow, this thing's toast, man. So I unplugged it. I put a fan back there. I tried it the next day. It worked great. The windings are fine. I ohmed it. The windings are fine. I mean, these things are indestructible. So the only way you got a machine that isn't going to work is if you get someone who don't know how to fix it. Or
so like if you break it, basically.
Yeah, or basically a piano fell on it, you know. You know, then I think you're in trouble. But they're pretty much indestructible.
So is there a particular piece of the machines that you just love to fix? Like, oh, it feels so
good. No, they're all it's all the same. I just love to get them finished, and I like when they're all done. But I do like polishing like the play fields and that. And then when the lights are on, you know, you see the reflection off the stuff. That's pretty cool. You know, I like to make them look as nice as I can.
So, have you ever, like, tried implementing new things into old machines?
I had a candy machine once that you couldn't see the product. You know, when it was a little darker, so I put a light in there. But that's about all I would do. It's not like I'm an engineer where I can sit there and say, oh, I bet this would be awesome if I can make this thing do this, this, or this. But no, I really haven't tried to put anything new in. Well, I take it back. There is something I have to do. I haven't done it yet because I don't know how, but I found it on the internet, and I'm going to keep bugging someone until they explain it to me. The Genco machines. Genco is a company in Illinois that went all the way in the corner. The ski balls at Genco. That is a DC voltage machine where everything is AC, so it has a little more kick for the coils and everything. But back in the day, they used a selenium rectifier, which is a giant chunk of selenium, which is toxic if it burns and it creates like a poisonous gas.
Okay.
So it would be advisable to get rid of that piece and put in just your regular rectifier of the day and like a resistor. But I just haven't done it. I'm like, well, I see the thing smoking. I'm just going to go outside.
go outside
for a while. And, you know. But that I have to do. And that's the only example I could think of is going from a new piece to an old piece. Another good one, which I do is they used to have light bulbs. I forgot exactly. One's a 44, one's a 47. One's like a half amp lower or an amp lower. You go with the lower bulbs behind the back glass because heat is a destroyer of your paint.
Hmm.
And if you normally your back glass is made of glass, okay? And because it's glass, you have different changes in temperature from the bulb, the glass basically moves, you know. And the silk screening on there moves at a different rate, so it peels. So that's what causes the peeling. Now, United, I think it was they're trying to be cheaper. It wasn't like they were being smarter. They use plexiglass. And because the plastic has the same characteristics as that that dye or whatever they use,
it doesn't
move at all. I never had one peel on me. But every glass peels. So a tip, you asked about a tip before. If you have a glass that's peeling a lot, the best thing to do is to go to Michael's or one of these stores. You get a product called Triple Thick. It's a glaze. It's in a spray can. In Walmart, actually, it has it. And you put your back glass down. You cover up what you don't want, you know, like where your numbers are, because you don't want film on that. Cover that with a piece of cardboard. You know, I put a little dot of glue, you know, the stick glue.
Mm-hmm.
Cover that up, and then you spray it real far away. If you go close, it's going to, and you just blew the whole picture away because it's really bad, you know. So you go far away, you give it a coating, it rains on it, let it dry, put another coating on, and then the back glass is good forever. So that's a good tip.
All right. So, have you ever gotten like outside help to fix specific parts? Like one part that you could have just figured out by yourself and you were like, all right, need
Well,
some.
I'm going to get outside help on the Selenium rectifier because I
Yeah.
don't know electronics at all. So
Right.
there's a great site. I send you a couple sites, and that Marvin site, and that guy's awesome. That guy Clay, he's in Michigan, and actually, it's Marvin was once. It's a different website, but if you type in Marvin, you're gonna find it. But anyway, this guy, he has an incredible how to fix a pinball machine webpage. And in it, he shows how to do a Selenium rectifier. And if I had a problem with it, I could just write the guy. The guy's really cool. He'll write you back. Yeah, I'll just take a picture. Which wire? That one. Okay, thanks. That's all I need to know.
And how much do you usually spend on repairing a machine, like getting, I don't know, little parts for it and stuff?
Varies. Again, it varies on things. If I bought a bowling machine, you're gonna buy new pins because the pins are broken or whatever. I think they're say $5 a pin. So that's $50 right there just on the pins, and that's not even part of the machine. That's just more of a decorative thing, and it does move, but it really doesn't do anything function wise. It's just so you get the illusion that the pins are going up, and basically pinball machines, you got to buy new rubbers. They got little rubber bumpers around everything. They rot out and they dry rot and they lose the elasticity. So they you. It doesn't bounce good. I like to seal the glasses if they're bad. You gotta buy wax. You gotta buy chemicals to clean it. You gotta buy lubricants. Flashlights, scouring pads. You can't use steel wool for obvious reasons. It will short out everything. So I get Scotch-Brite. That's a good product to use. Some people like to redo the cabinets. I like them when they look like they're beat up a little bit because I'd rather have it look like it's a game from 40 years ago instead of one that I just went to the store and bought. But some people paint them, so then you got to get stencils made. You got to get, there's a lot that can go into one of these.
So, how much is the most you've ever?
Most I ever spent? Let's see. Okay, we'll use that coffee machine. My vending machines are more costly than the games. The vending machine, I had to get painted. I got paint from this one guy, cost me a couple $100. He did a bad job, so I had to get another guy. Before I got him, I said, well, it'd be nice if I got this all sandblasted, so I had to pay a sandblaster. Then I had to get it sealed right away, otherwise it would rust, so I had to run over to an auto shop and have him prime it. So that cost me money. Then I had him paint it, so that was more money. And then after that, I got the chrome, and I just talked to the guy to do the chrome. I said, how much for the chrome? He's like, $600. And I paid $900 for the machine, so by the time this thing's done, it's going to cost me $2,500 plus a boiler. I was explaining it earlier. The boiler's old and nasty inside. If you get a new boiler, they don't make them, but I can rig something up from this one, like instantaneous hot water heater. It's got to be 180 degrees though, so that's going to cost me $150. And then you got to buy your product and everything else. If you're going to rewire anything, then you got to buy cups. And so by the time you're done, just say I spent $3,000 on this thing. If I go to sell it, I'll be lucky to get two. So it depends on what you want to put into it. Like right now, I'm not going to do the chrome until I get it to work. If I get it to work, then I might think about it. But it's like a lot of these things you got to do at little chunks at a time because it just gets so costly.
So it seems that this coffee machine is giving you a lot of trouble
Yeah,
then,
that's one of the ones that I wish I could take a hammer to it, but I got too much invested in it now, so I'm just trying to make it work, and so I can, maybe one day, like I said, it'll go out the door.
So you mentioned that you repaired once a machine before for a friend of yours, a guy that I said that
Yeah.
he wanted to. Do you do that often, or just like that one
No,
special
I did
occasion?
it. My uncle has a Shuffle Alley. Like I said, Shuffle Alleys were really popular in the day. They were at every single bar, so anybody growing up in that era seen one. So then when they come over, oh, a Shuffle Alley, you could tell how old someone is basically by what game they go to, And the people my age are a little older, they jump on that Shuffle Alley. So anyway, my uncle has one, and I told him, he's like, again, it's one of those, I'll give you $100. No, I'll just do it for nothing. Don't worry about it. He's like, well, it'll take a few hours. Yeah, a few hours
A day.
a day. So I told him, I said, you know what? I said, why don't you do it with me? He said, all right. I said, I'll do it for nothing if you do it with me. He said, all right. I was going to charge him anyway, but at least I guess it's got to help. So anyway, we worked on this thing, and we worked on it. After work, I would go over to his house, and I'd work on it for about 4 or 5 hours a day. We did it for like a week. And when we were done, he said, oh my God, he said, I never realized how much time and effort goes into doing one of these machines. He's like, and all the ones you have in your basement, he's like, I don't know how the hell you got these going. It's a lot of work. You know, it really is. But I did it for him, and I've fixed two games I sold, and I did it for that one guy, the one I told you for the 1500. But generally, I don't like doing it because it's just too time-consuming, and I don't enjoy that part of it. I enjoy fixing it for myself and getting my game to work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to be out there and just because I like to work. That's not it. I like to get my things to work, you know, for me. But I do offer assistance where someone will write me, because I got some stuff on YouTube, so people will write me and say, hey, I got this, what's it worth? That's all they ever care about. I'm like, I don't know. It's worth whatever someone's going to pay you. That's the best answer I can give you. And he's like, well, I got this problem. And I said, you know, you got to take it all apart. Oh, can you do that? No. I said, but I can show you pictures of how I did them before, and you can do it. If you get a jam, send me a picture. I'll tell you what you're doing wrong. And no one ever took you up on it. they want you to do the work.
Yeah,
for
them, they
know.
Don't want to work for
I'm
it.
Like, I'll show you how to do it. No, it's okay. Yeah.
So, have you ever been injured while working in one of the machines?
I got zapped before. Because
they have really high voltage on some of the machines.
Some have high voltage. Like I said, the Genco is DC, and DC will kill you. AC would tingle. But that pole position I have, I was doing some reading up on that because it has a TV tube in there, and I always knew TV tubes are high voltage, but I didn't know like thousands of volts. So if I plug this sucker in, and you go back there and you put your hand on that top of that tube and you hit that one wire where the capacitors and all that are, you'll be on the floor. You'll either be dead or you'll be like, why did I do that? You know, so that's very dangerous. I never got anything like that. I never really hurt myself. I might have just, you know, banged my hand or something. You know, but no, I never really hurt myself.
Not really an injury, just an inconvenience at that time.
Like, yeah, like I got zinged one time. I was trying to do something. I said, that's stupid. Let me turn the power off. You know, but nothing. No, it's not like one of them fell on me and something crushed my ribs or anything. You know.
Do you know many other people that repair pinball machines? Is there like a community that you're part of?
There is. Like I said, if you got into the hobby of it, there's websites you go to and you start meeting people. I don't really belong to any websites except for one. It's a sodamachines.com is a website, and it's basically people collecting soda machines. But in there's a lot of people who collect other things, and that's how I found some of my machines, was through there. You know, this guy's like, hey, I know you're looking for this, and I'm like, oh yeah, great. And then another guy's like, here, I found this, do you know what this is? I said, actually, I'm looking for that. If you don't want it, I'll take it. He said, yeah. So he went to an auction for me and everything, and then he actually drove it in from like Cincinnati.
Yeah.
So it's like a good little network of you get some really good friends, and then there's a lot of people just trying to use this source as to trying to get information on selling stuff. You know, people always ask, what's that for, how much is this? You know, it's, you know, they're just trying to fish out some information. But yeah, I'm sure there is a lot of communities out there. You can just go to Google anywhere. It's just, there's a lot of places I would like to talk to these people, but since I'm so computer illiterate, I don't even know how to get on some of these sites. Like, oh, I got to join. Okay, crap. All right, where do I got to go? I got to go here. Do I get a password? I don't know. What's this? So there's a lot of sites out there. I just don't really talk to that many people out there on it. But I'm sure you could find some if you wanted to.
And have you ever, like, given any thought or tried to make your own machine out of, like, other parts of the machine?
No, but I did make my electricity, my lights and games come on in the basement, coin-operated. So I took parts from, like, a light box that they were tossing at this one place. I took that, and I took contactors that I had. And I basically made a little Frankenstein box. I took a pinball part. I don't even know what it is. It was just, I was looking for a certain relay that would when it's energized, it will close the switch. Usually, like, close open or open close, you know. This will actually hold it until you give it another energize the coil one more time, then we'll release it. And that's the thing I was looking for. And then I bought a box. Actually, it's on that pole behind there. You might not be able to see that red box. That actually is a box that when, just say they had a Coke machine and it was 5 cents and the economy, you know, was prices were going up and they're like, wow, we should make that a 6 cent machine. But if I do that, I have to change that whole handle part, the coin mech. I got to get a different rejector. I got all these internal parts I have to change. They're like, why don't we just put this box on the outside? You put a penny in it. And then you put your nickel in, so you still get the 6 cents. And this box would send close a relay and say, okay, you know, take the nickel or whatever. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I took one of those boxes, I gutted it, and I just kept the coin switch. So now, when you put a penny in that box, it's going to make a switch, which is going to go to another box that I have hidden, and it's going to make that stepping relay, which is going to close that switch, which is going to let the I got a transformer in there too, feeding through all this. So I got 24 volts going through these lines, and that's going to close a switch, which is going to send that 24 volts into the coil of my contactor. And I got a 3-pole contactor. So when that closes, I got this half of the room on one circuit, the beer signs on another circuit, and that half of the other half on another circuit. So I have three breakers that I utilize. I rewired everything. And I made it so, because I had games on this side originally. I had just made it a seating area. Originally, I had games here, games there, and then the beer lights. So when you put the penny in, everything comes on. So that I did make from various parts of different things just because I thought it was kind of cool.
That is.
Yeah. Yeah, and my son, when you see him, just tell him that was a cool idea, and I'll show you how it works. He just said, I was like, Dad, that's the lamest thing I ever seen you do. I said, come on, man. This is cool. It's a coin-op room. Everything's coin-operated. You put a freaking penny in, you get electricity. That is cool. And he's like, no, Dad, that's lame. So, and my other son and my wife thought the same. But, you know, everybody else thinks, hey, that's cool. So I just you know, feel good when you guys tell me that. Yes, I am fishing for that. But yeah, that's the only thing I ever actually did anything with. Yeah, Frankenstein did it, exactly. The old MacGyver.
So besides the coffee machine, has there ever been another machine that the effort and time of it has been like not worth it?
Yeah, I have a Coke machine out in the garage, and I took the wires off that 3 years ago, and they still are off it. And I tagged it, and I'm like just hoping that I will remember. But I actually found an actual manual that had a real good schematic in there, so I can always trace it back. It's just going to be time-consuming because I ain't going to remember what I did 3 years ago, let alone 5 years on that thing. Yeah, but generally, no. I do have other machines. I just bought one. I got one that might be a machine that will be one of those that will fall into the category of cannot be fixed. But it was just so cool, I had to get it. And I, you know, my wife's always like, you know, you're not gonna get any more machines, are you? No, I got no room. Well, where am I gonna put it? So I go, okay, you promise, right? Yeah, I promise. Then I'm like, hey, guess what I bought? You know. So anyway, it was actually last week I bought this. There was a 1938 pinball machine, okay, from Genco. So probably got Selenium Rocket Fire 2 in there. But what it is, instead of, you know, back in the 30s, they didn't have two-player games, you know, because, you know, they had no score reels even. You a ball will fall in a hole and they have like 100 points. You got to add all that up, you know, you had to actually work to play. Mm-hmm. But this one is actually, it's a dual pinball machine, so it's two machines, same machine, but different play fields. It's like these guys and gals from the 30s all decked out with their hats and suits on, and they're standing by basically a like a horse race, a place where you go for a race. What do you call this?
Track.
Thank you. They're standing by the front of like a track, and this play field has this guy and girl, and this one has another one. So it's the same scene, but it's on two play fields. So it's like one giant scene of this track, and then it has bumpers on there. So that's your electrical action of it, and then the background is just one giant piece. It's not separated by the two machines now. It's just one giant piece, and it has two horses on it. So anytime your ball hits one of those bumpers, the horses move. So it's a horse race game. And they got five balls, so there's no flippers to bring the game back up. But the ball falls down by gravity, hits the bumpers, and your horse moves, and whoever gets to the finish line first wins, or get halfway if you run out of balls or whatever. But that's like the last thing I bought, and that's really cool. But I looked in there, and there's broken wires, and there's a lot of things wrong, and they don't have schematics for those. So I was like, it was a hit or miss thing, and I just decided I'm taking a gamble. Because I get it work, and that thing would be worth some serious coin for one, but it would just be so cool because it's very, very rare.
Yeah.
You know?
I've never heard of a machine like that.
Yeah, it's neat. It's neat. It's weird looking, you know. But it's pretty neat.
So what do you say, or what do you think are the skills that you need to be to repair pinball machines?
Electrical and mechanical and common sense.
Like a lot of patience.
A lot of patience. But basically it's all electrical and mechanical, the stuff I work. I don't work on no electronics. I don't work on no new games. I don't understand that. So I just do the old stuff.
And like, are there any... Is there a lot of specific tools for pinballs, or just like regulars?
Regular tools. I find 11/32 wrenches are very popular. Your screws are always like 6/32, you know, a lot of them. Basically, I have crescent wrench, regular wrenches, nut drivers, needle nose, if you're going to need needle nose, screwdriver, of course, various kinds. Various lengths, you know, that contact bending tool, and Scotch-Brite. Scotch-Brite cleans everything, gets all the gunk off, and it polishes without destroying. I think I got Scotch-Brite up here somewhere. So anyway, it's a reddish material. Yeah, I don't see it. But yeah, here we go, Scotch-Brite, and it polishes the contacts without destroying them, because you can really take them apart. So this stuff is great for cleaning. You know, but that's the only tools you really need. Oh, and meter, sorry, electrical meter. Yeah, that's a big one.
So, like, but are there any specialized tools, or do you just decide?
Just
to
that
like,
the only specialist tool I have is that one crooked wrench, like I said, that contact bending tool. They make tools for light bulbs and this and that, but I don't use them. They're just a waste of money. But that's the only tool you really do need is that L-shaped contact bending tool. Because I can show you contact banks. They're like this long, and you got all these switches in there. You have to get to the back, say, here's a switch. I can't just push here and fix it. I got to go all the way back here and bend this thing down. Well, there's like 10 of them here. How the hell are you going to get to that? You can take all these apart, but now they're all out of alignment, and you got to go through each one. Or you got this long tool, sticks through there, and you can just bend it. You know, it's something... Whoever came up with it is so simple, but it's like, yeah, that's the way to go. Glad you thought of it. I know I didn't.
And so when in these pinball machines, do you often get the manual or just like try to figure out
they
yourself?
They didn't have manuals. The United Games only had schematics. There was no manuals. The 60s, a lot of things weren't in manuals. 30s, there was zero manuals in the 30s. You're lucky if you find a schematic. 70s, you had a lot of manuals in that. But my games are mainly 60s.
Mm-hmm. And how much time do you think it took you to become an efficient repair machine?
I'd say probably about, I don't know, maybe three years, 4 years. It depends on how many machines you had, you know. First, when I first got into it, I was getting a lot of machines and get more practice. Basically, it's more practice. A couple years, it'd be good. But you have to understand the electrical, and you have to understand the mechanical. Actually, the mechanical-wise, I was really stupid on that. And my wife is like a freaking genius mechanically. You know, like, I'd be looking at something for hours. Man, I can't figure this crap out. She's like, right here. You see it? No, I don't see it. I've been looking for an hour. Tick, 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 tick. Here. Oh, thanks. Then she'll walk away, you know. But when it came to electrical, that's where I was smoker on that, you know. Kind of, hey, you don't know this. I do. But yes. So you have to have that. Now I'm a lot better. I can see things a lot better. But I just didn't think that way where she would think that way. Yeah, my dad was the same way. He'd look at something, I'm like, yeah, okay, I have to work on that. Hold on. Translate.
There's a lot of things I gotta figure out how to translate.
So what are some strengths that you have that you think definitely help you in repairing?
Like I said, electrical and mechanical skills. That's really what you need. And being strong is nice because these things can weigh like 300, 400, or 500 pounds. So you have to get them in the house or whatever, or have young children. That always helps.
So how many machines do you actually have?
I don't know. Feel free to walk around and count them. There's a lot.
I don't know.
I think there's like, I don't know, like maybe if you think about small vending stuff, I got over 15, 20 vending machines, probably about 15 or so arcade games. I got 2 jukeboxes. I had a couple more of those. I got like, I don't know, 25 beer signs. They're all mechanical too, by the way. Every one of these signs move. So I like all the signs to move. So everything has motion. Except for one, and I don't know where that's over on the other side, but everything moves. Yeah, I like motion science. That's one of my hobbies.
That's nice.
And once I put that penny in, you'll see it all.
Looking forward to it. So which machine right now is the one you're like super proud of?
I'd say my Papa Red popcorn machine is the one I'm super proud of as far as vending machine goes. And that's because I got this thing, and when I got it, it was so nasty. The globe, it would have popcorn kernels, kind of like a gumball machine globe. It had gumballs. It had popcorn kernels in there. But mine was half full of maggots because it was in the basement in Nebraska, and this guy found it. I'd seen it on eBay, and I bought this. It was one of my great investments. You know, hey, I think I can do some of that. But it was just so nasty. And the grease was solidified. It was the consistency of like caramel, like on a taffy apple.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like oil, like vegetable oil turning to caramel. I mean, just it full of maggots, too. Switches were full of maggots. I actually had to open up the switches and found a maggot crawled in there, grew up, and couldn't get out. So the contact wouldn't make. You know, it was just really disgusting. And when I got this thing, it's one of these things I wanted forever, and it had a stand. I love stands. Like, this is a jukebox. It has a stand. Normally, they don't. That one has a stand. Normally, they don't. This has a stand. I like stands, okay? So, this is a popcorn machine, and it had a stand. That was the only time I ever seen one of these with a stand. So, I'm like, I'm going to get it. So, this was a perfect I told you so type moment for my wife, but she was cool about it. When it arrived, it came in. I opened it up in the garage because you never know if there's any roaches, mice, or anything like that. You don't want to open that up in your house.
Mm-hmm.
So I opened up in the garage. The guy was nice enough to get rid of the maggots, at least, in the globe. And it was in such bad shape. It was so disgusting that my wife's like, there's no way I'm eating anything out of this. I said, man, I don't even want to touch it, you know? But it was so bad, and Kyle, my one son, he came up to me and was like, Dad, did you find that in the garbage? I said, no, I actually bought this. I think I paid like 1,500 bills for this thing. It was expensive as hell. But that one, I actually tore it apart, basically boiled everything, got it hospital clean, as I call it, got it to the point where it was clean enough to put together. Then the wiring was missing, so there was nothing on the internet for them. So I found a guy who had a picture of one from a brochure. I said, can I see the picture of that? Because it was like this book here where you would see something, you know, like this. It would have like a parts breakdown. I'm trying to find a decent one here, like that. And I want to see where these, you know, wires go at least. So the guy sent me a picture reluctantly. He's like, you can't show it to no one. I said, no, don't worry. I just want to fix this machine. So he sent it to me. I looked at it, and I figured out the wiring off a picture. And then I rewired it, I fired it up, and I got it to work. Once I got it to work, I took it to a painter, had it painted, had the stuff re-chromed, had a decal made. I went to a decal shop and had a decal made. And this thing came out fantastic. And it's like one of the centerpieces. Everybody's like, "Ooh, this is so cool," you know. And that's what I'm most proud of on that. I did that from top to bottom. And on the electromechanical side, I'd say it's my Acme roulette machine, because it was a prototype. They made 100 of them. They sent them off to Vegas. They paid out too well, so they took a sledgehammer and they busted 50 of them up, and the other 50 ended up in a warehouse in Chicago. And at the time, slots were legal, so people were buying them like underground. Mm-hmm. And basically, those people are dying off. They're older than me, so they're dying off, selling off their collection. I ended up with one of them, so it's an actual functioning roulette machine that pays out on 3-1, 2-1, 36-1 odds. And it's like one of 40, so I would say that's probably the machine as far as electromechanical, that's the one.
Mm-hmm. So, like, is there a specific genre of machines that you like to obtain?
It's 1960s arcade machines.
1960s, and like, is there a specific like?
Baseball is 1960, sharpshooter is 1960, and 50s, I guess. I got 50s and 60s arcade.
And is there a specific theme of the, or just whatever 50s, 60s?
No, like I said earlier, the thing I like about my collection is everyone's a little different. I don't have like all one pinball, mm-hmm. all pinball, all jukebox, because a lot of people collect, they got like,
one thing.
Here's 20 Coke machines. Yeah, well, I seen one, and I seen the other 19. I like to have a little variety, so everything's a little different. And pretty soon I might have a Junko horse game down here.
And do you know which machine is the one that like collectors of pinball machines look out for the most?
For my stuff, I have a few that they would like to get. That Music My Jukebox was made in 52. They didn't make too many of them. That one's in awesome shape. That's highly collectible. The popcorn machine, now that I put stuff out on the web and people have been discovering them, they've been coming out of the woodwork now, and they're highly collectible now. The baseball machine is highly collectible. Of course, my roulette machine isn't as highly collectible as you would think, even as one of 40, and that's because that's a slot machine, and that's a different animal of collectors. Slot machine people like totally mechanical machines, just to pull the arm, from the 30s, 40s, and they're about this big. They don't like anything that's a console. That's a console, you know, wood cabinet. They don't like console slots. But if they ever decided that they do, that would be one worth a lot of money.
So, like, how much do they offer you for a specific machine?
Most I ever sold one for, I bought another one of the popcorn ones, and I sold it for $4,500.
$4,500?
And I bought it for $1,000. I paid like $300 for the paint, so I did good on that one.
So, you said your greatest pinball repair was the one with a popcorn machine. Was it?
That was a popcorn machine. That was my, as far as repair, that was the one that brought me the most joy, we'll say. The most satisfying was a popcorn. It's a Popperette popcorn machine.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool because you put a coin in, it's got a cam system, and it actually drops kernels down into a pan. And then the pan goes down into a vat of oil. And the oil starts boiling, and then the kernels pop. So you actually look through a window, and you see them pop. Then it kicks it out at you, and then you put it in a bag or container, and you put salt on it, and it's really good popcorn. It's they use coconut oil. That's what they use at the movie theater, so it tastes like movie theater popcorn. This way they can get away with not using butter, because, you know, butter will spoil. Coconut oil doesn't spoil because it hardens, so air can't get in there and spoil it. So it turns into like wax. At 70, I think 6 degrees, it melts.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. All right. And so what issues or problems do you see like the pinball industry facing today?
Lack of interest from kids your age. I don't think it's going to survive because nobody plays it. You know, I'm sure you guys don't go around looking for any machines to play. You got your games that you play in your bedroom or your
yeah.
front rooms. So everything's conveniently right there. There's no need to go searching for anything. So I think lack of interest is going to be it.
Yeah, of course. And so, like, there's always this interesting trend in, like, humanity where things often come back, you know, like different
right,
styles.
Sure.
Of, do you think that's something that
I
could
think
happen?
It already passed.
It already passed.
Mm-hmm. Because I don't know what you guys weren't born yet. They had a big revolution in the 80s of nostalgia where they started bringing back all the 50s music. Okay, like, you know, Magic 104 came around and they're playing all these 50 songs, and people were like hearing them saying, wow, this is really good. What is this crap? You know, it's good music. They brought back, you know, cars, you know, muscle cars
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that. Then games, Coke machines, and stuff. Like I said, when I first got my first one, people looked at me like I was weird because they're like, what the hell you got? What is this? Why is that in your room? You know, I had it in my bedroom. But then it became kind of cool and collectible, and then people started, it was trendy. So that phase faded away, but there's still people, you know, collecting it. The only phase that came back is muscle cars now. If you see, like, the Hellcat and the other cool Dodge products, you know, that's awesome. I'm glad that did return. I just wish my kid wasn't at IIT so I could afford one.
That degree is your muscle car.
So, what would be a perfect day for you nowadays?
When you three get up and leave, man, that would be awesome. perfect day as far as what? Anytime I wake up, I'm happy. You know, just I made another day. Honestly, you know, it would be the perfect thing since we're talking machines. The perfect thing would be for me to have a party, you know, either my kid's graduation party, someone's birthday, you know, Christmas or whatever. We got a lot of people together. Everybody's playing the games. Everybody's enjoying it, and not one fails. Because you always get, hey, this ain't working. Hey, this is. Well, come on, man. This thing's 60 years old. Of course, something's going to hang up here and there, you know? Oh, this one went out. Well, unplug it, you know? So the perfect thing would be everything working, and, you know, and then I wake up. Oh, it's only a dream. Yeah, because there's always something failing. Like I said, with that one cooked, you know? Because they could have just told me, hey, there's a problem. But most people are like, run away, you know. It's like one time a ball was jammed. I got this bowling machine. It has a turret that actually moves, and it has a catapult system. So when you hit the lever, it flings a ball at the pins. But one time the ball got jammed, and they just left it. I'm like, you hear what the hell's that noise? I'm like, oh shit! Turn this thing off. It's gonna, you know, get destroyed. You know, so I just wish another perfect day would be if something happened, someone let me know. You know? Instead of, like, spilling a drink and putting a rug over it. Now they'll never see that. You know.
So if you could pass down one piece of knowledge about pinball repair, what would you say?
It's addictive. Don't get involved in it. You'll be a pinball repair junkie. One thing of knowledge to pass down.
Pinball repair, not even once.
Yeah, it's just like I said before. If you get a game, check it out. Make sure everything's there, nothing's broken, because you're not gonna find parts. And number two, if you go to fix it, take your time on it and do a good job, and you know it should be fine. You know, get the right tools.
All right. Well. Mr. Larry Wilson, thank you so much for the interview.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. It was my pleasure.
Yeah,
nice meeting you guys.
It was very enlightening.
Good. Good. Do you want to play some games now?
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah. Man, we have to snag some photos of you.
Sure.
Yeah.
No problem. Just like I said, make sure he's not in any of them. So
he asked me to when I asked.